Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is podcast number 216. Now before we get onto the meat and bones of the podcast with Hull Boy, on Sunday at the Inverness Cali Romp, I met up with Mark, one of the main supporters from the Celtic Charity Foundation, where he gave me an update for the podcast about the badge day on Sunday, May the 11th, the final game of the season, the trophy day. Of course, most of us will know that it's something that was disregarded for most of the 20th century and brought back in by Fergus McCann. So it is fitting that in the year that we win the trophy and the 20th anniversary of Fergus saving the club, that the Celtic Foundation is going strong and that we have a badge day to raise money for the Celtic Foundation on the day that we get the trophy, Sunday, the 11th of May. The Celtic Foundation are looking for volunteers to help collect funds and sell the badges. They're £1 a time. I'll leave it to Mark to explain if you're interested. The email address for contacting if you want to be one of the helpers is cfcfvolunteer@celticfc.co.uk. That's C for Celtic, F for football, C for club, F for foundation, volunteer@celticfc.co.uk. Oh, and apologies for the sound, especially my bits. By Mark from the Celtic Charity, you may have seen on the Celtic website and I've retweeted on Twitter about their badge day on the day that we get the trophy. So Mark, do you want to tell us a bit more about it?
Yeah, the badge day on the 11th of May is from the Celtic FC Foundation Supporters Committee. We're selling Celtic Foundation badges for a minimum donation of £1, which will go to the charity, and the charity will then donate that money to homeless causes in Glasgow and the surrounding area.
So it's pretty easy for people to do. They just need to turn up. People who think that the club should do more to get back to its foundations, that's what the Celtic Foundation's about. We're going to be doing a podcast shortly with a wee bit more about the Celtic Foundation, but this is about helping the club fulfil what many of us think is the club's raison d'etre.
Absolutely. The foundation is all about supporting good causes, not just here in Glasgow, but in the surrounding areas as well. And this is a great opportunity for fans coming along to the game, to the trophy winning day, to come along and support the foundation. It's simple, a minimum donation of £1 in return for a badge for Celtic FC Foundation. And as I said, it will support homeless projects in Glasgow. We also have the opportunity for fans, if they can come along a little bit earlier, to come and be a badge seller on the day. If people can come along for 10 a.m. on the 11th of May, then they can work with the foundation, support the foundation and become a badge day seller on that day. And it's pretty straightforward, it's pretty easy. Come along, get some badges, rattle the tin and get your fellow Celtic supporters to invest in the Celtic FC Foundation and support a worthy cause.
And if they come for the match day, will they get to see the trophy getting given?
They absolutely will. Anybody who comes along and supports the foundation by being a badge day seller will be entitled to a free match day ticket for the game. So come along early, sell some badges, get in and see the champions and see them get the trophy and enjoy the celebrations at the end.
So two things we're looking for are people to turn up with a pound or more if they want to get their badge, and a smaller number of people to actually help to get the badges out there and volunteer. They can turn up a wee bit earlier and they get free match day ticket as well, so they can pass their own normal match day ticket to a mate. So what they can do is charge their mate a couple of quid for the use of their match day ticket. They can contribute their mates a couple of quid into their bucket and at the same time turn up, get their own match day ticket and sell more badges.
Sounds like a perfect plan. I'm glad you thought of that and not me. But it's absolutely right. Come along, sell some badges, get in and see the game. If you can come along early, then just make sure you've saved up a pound between now and May the 11th and support Celtic FC Foundation and the homeless charities in Glasgow. And we must remember that that's what the club is all about. And what can be more worthy as we're celebrating three in a row, the champions of Scotland, by supporting homeless projects in this city.
If people want to volunteer to help out, how do they do that?
It's simple. Again, just email cfcfvolunteer@celticfc.co.uk. That's cfcfvolunteer@celticfc.co.uk.
And if you didn't pick that email address up, which Mark's now said it twice, I will also have it if you go on the podcast or you go on the site or whatever, the email address will be there as well. Thanks for joining us, Mark. Speak to you soon.
You're welcome.
And you say, God damn, this is a dope jam. But let's define the term called dope. And you're thinking me funky now? No, here is a true tale. Why the ones that deal, all the ones that fail, yeah. You can move if you want to move. What it prove? It's here like the groove. The problem is this. We gotta fix it, check out the justice and how they run it, selling, smelling, sniffing, ripping.
Right, now that you've all paused your podcast to get away, fire off your email volunteering to sell the badges and put something back into the Celtic Foundation and be part of the charitable heritage of our club. I'm now joined by Hallboy on the podcast. We touch a bit on the Inverness Cali game, the good performances at the Inverness Cali game, and a wee bit about the team in general in the last wee while, and what our hopes might be for into the Champions League, etc. next season. But before we can talk about all of that in Champions League football, we also have to consider that Armageddon 2 is on the horizon in Scottish football, because Rangers might go into their second administration, apparently. We've known the fact that Rangers went bust, and this is a second Rangers going into its first administration. But hey, never mind the pedantic nature of it, it's just once again glory in the fact that they can't get their act together, the team that plays out of Ibrox and the supporters, whichever club they support. So this is me, Harry Brady, and this is him, Hallboy.
We're gonna get on down now.
I'm joined now by Hallboy. It's a wee while since we've spoken in the podcast. Hallboy, so how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks, Harry. How's yourself?
I'm excellent, thank you. I enjoyed the game yesterday when we played Inverness Cali Thistle. And funnily enough, I was talking to a Dunfermline supporter, and I started off a statement that he then started shaking his head and said, no, I've never experienced this, but I have been on the other end. It was one of those games where, after a point, you thought to yourself, we can score as many goals as we want to here.
Yeah.
What did you think of the performance?
Well, I mean, I wasn't at the game yesterday, but that was the general impression I got. I think kind of even the Cali Thistle Twitter account was waving the white flag, from judging by some of the tweets they were putting out. So, I've seen the goals, obviously, and seen the Fraser Foster penalty incident, which was never a penalty.
We'd get six or seven penalties a game, if that's a penalty.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely bizarre. I don't know what was going through the referee's mind to give that. But we scored some good goals, and I think, you know, it's probably good for Anthony Stokes' confidence that he got a hat-trick. We've got a chance now of, you know, with the games remaining, of still getting 100 points and over 100 goals, you know, so there's a possibility of that. And I'm pretty sure Neil Lennon, you know, will maybe set those as kind of the final targets for the season.
I think the last game of the season should take care of itself, with the players not wanting to let people down. For me, the important game out of what's the three that's left is the game against Aberdeen. As much because I'm fed up with the press's loving of Aberdeen and trying to imply that they'll be able to offer a challenge next season.
Yeah, although, if you look at it, I think, you know, obviously in recent weeks Dundee United and have got maybe an eye on the cup final, and certainly will by the time we play them, and as will St Johnstone probably. But I think actually Aberdeen, they're pretty strong. If they actually get a couple of players in during the summer, then you could actually see them losing less games and drawing less games than they have done this season. So I think there'll still be a gap between us and them, but I think that they've got every opportunity to actually kind of strengthen that kind of second place in Scottish football.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I mean, there's a part of me wants Aberdeen to finish second this season, finish second next season. We won the League Cup this season. I'd like us to win the treble next season, but I wouldn't mind if Aberdeen got to the finals, because that's a couple of million quid in their bank, more than they've been getting the last few years. And if a team from Ibrox manages to get into the into the Premiership in the next three or four seasons, you just like I really like the concept that they're not only not challenging for the Championship, that they're struggling to even get second place.
Yeah, I mean, we can maybe talk about those things later on in the podcast, but I think not just Aberdeen, there are other teams now in Scottish football where, to a certain extent, they've been kind of living within their means for kind of maybe 5, 6, 7 years now, where their youth systems are quite well developed. We see that with Dundee United. So they've actually got all of that infrastructure in place to be able to kind of, you know, strengthen year on year. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of quite ironic that Hibs have been going the other way, and obviously Rangers and Hearts, just kind of imploded, basically.
Yeah.
So.
And getting back to the Celtic performance away from the other teams, you mentioned Anthony Stokes.
Yeah.
I'm not a fantastic fan of Stokes because I think he plays in his heels too much. However, he played his best football next to Hooper, and he now seems to be playing his better football again alongside Griffiths.
Yeah. Well, I didn't get the negative Stokes text from yesterday, so I guess something must have gone right on the back. The thing with Anthony Stokes is, people forget sometimes that he's, he is a striker, he's scored a lot of goals, but he has that kind of preference to drift out wide. So people sometimes kind of claim that he's kind of anonymous in games. I think the other thing with Stokes this season is because we lost Hooper, and we didn't get a kind of a like-for-like replacement of Hooper, so we persevered with Samaras, who has not had a good season, and obviously his career this season was kind of almost on hold, if you like, because of the fact that it was fairly obvious he was never ever going to sign a new contract with Celtic.
Yeah.
And I just think there are certain players in the attacking positions for Celtic who, when Samaras plays, Samaras himself may have a good game, but he's not a team player for me. Samaras, the other players don't know what he's going to do with the ball, and so people like Stokes get affected in that. So you saw in the first half of the season, when Stokes was playing with Samaras, that Stokes maybe appeared anonymous. But you can see the look on the faces sometimes of Stokes and Commons. Just haven't a clue what Samaras is going to do with the ball. So.
Yeah, I remember when Hooper was at the club, there'd be a couple of games where if Hooper had a niggling injury or whatever, Len would play Samaras and Stokes.
Yeah.
Never ever felt that the two of them could play together.
No. Partly because Stokes likes to drift out, as does Griffiths.
Yeah.
But I think you've already seen that there's a better understanding between Griffiths and Stokes. There's, you know, this isn't telepathic in one sense. It's more to do with the fact that, you know, kind of footballers are coached in a certain way and play to certain systems. And we all know, because I mean, Neil Lennon's admitted it himself, that, you know, that they've more or less had to fit Samaras into a kind of a unique role. And I think having done that, that hasn't suited the kind of the natural abilities and the normal systems that, that other players play to.
Having said that, I also think that those two that you mentioned, Griffiths and Stokes, and we can, I don't know if you want to touch on the Griffiths, whether he should be in the team at all, perhaps. But I think they benefit from Commons when it's virtually a 4-3-3 that we're playing.
I think Commons has played well in that role this season. Not obviously just because he's got so many goals, but, you know, I mean, I think that has worked well. It's kind of pulled opposition defences around a little bit more than we've seen sometimes in previous seasons, where we've been a bit slow paced and a bit kind of one dimensional, and that has often been when Samaras has played. I don't know. I don't want to be overly critical of Samaras, but, you know, I mean.
But you will.
Well, it is curious, just run its course at Celtic, and actually, the worrying thing for me, and I do mean it in a worrying sense, is that no other offers come in for him during the summer, and that for some reason Celtic feel as though they should make him an offer, and he accepts and renews a contract. I would actually be quite disappointed if that happened. I know there's been talk about he's got clubs lined up, but certainly wasn't much interest in the January window.
No, but I would be very surprised if he's with us at the end of the season, beginning of next season. Bo Richter, I expect, is gone, or will be. You know, we've seen his last game. Do you think we'll keep Pookie?
I persevere with Pookie. I think he's got something about him. I mean, you saw the goal yesterday. You know, I mean, he knows where the goal is. I think the thing with Pookie is, we need to see him go through a kind of a proper pre-season, which he didn't do this time around. And I think secondly, it's about, people have said it over the years, you have to have a certain kind of mental state, if you like, to play for Celtic. You've got to be really kind of strong-willed, strong in the mind, and I'm not sure Pookie has that kind of temperament. That, and it's whether he can grow into that. You know, whatever we think of people like Griffiths can handle playing at Celtic, because he's got that. However you might want to describe it, but he's got that self-belief, he's got that inner confidence, where he's probably taken so many knocks and abuse over the years that it isn't going to faze him at all. Whereas with Pookie, I think even though he was obviously he was at Schalke, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Schalke, I don't think there's that kind of like goldfish bowl.
And you also, you make reference to Griffiths there.
Yeah.
Now, obviously there's these off-field issues, and a number of people, not condoning what he's done, have defended what he's done by saying this is obviously an education issue. This is not the brightest young lad, and that we should be educating him. Now, your point about the self-confidence bit, I know I dealt with a lot of salespeople in my time. This is going to sound also quite patronising, but some of the better salespeople I've come across have not been the brightest. Because by not being the brightest, they lack that self-awareness element that says, I'm not sure about whether I should be this brash and bold about something.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's the same thing with Griffiths, from your point. If, as people are saying, he likes it, he maybe likes that self-awareness thing that he couldn't care less, because he doesn't think about it that much.
Yeah. I think there's something to that, you know. On one level, you know, it's wrong that he sang what he sung. Let's make that absolutely clear. But then the issue becomes one which, you know, we kind of comment on in non-football circles, whether it's a matter of kind of punishment or education or a combination of the two, you know. And, you know, a lot of people have been critical of the Green Brigade banner yesterday and, you know, saying it's all hypocrisy and the rest of it. You know, I don't really have a problem with the Green Brigade putting that banner up. I think it's fair enough. Well, you know, why shouldn't, you know, they use... you know, a famous quote from Celtic history to actually just remind not just Lee Griffiths but others. You know, I mean, you still hear a lot of casual racism around.
Yeah.
In and around football. You know, and we shouldn't try and pretend that, you know, the Celtic support as a mass, are completely squeaky clean and above board. So that's clearly not the case, and certain incidents happen from time to time. But I'm not going to be critical of the Green Brigade in terms of what they did yesterday. And I think,
I suppose what I did hear from somebody said, well, Lee Griffiths could then hold up a banner about the, from Jock Stein's quote of, "Are there not enough Celtic songs for you to sing?"
Well, somebody pointed out, I think, you know, there are a lot more Celtic songs that are sung by the Green Brigade than probably in previous eras of Celtic singing. If you think it through...
That's why Stein's quote comes from when it does, for the point you just made. The point being, there is an argument of, they're not perfect either.
There are certain things
in the carrying on the image of Celtic in a positive light to all and sundry.
Yeah, but I think, you know, again, that's quite a complex issue, and a lot of things have been laid at the Green Brigade's door, when in actual fact we later kind of find out, once the tabloids have forgotten about all the brash headlines and criticisms of the Green Brigade, that, you know, in actual fact, certain misdemeanours or certain actions by certain supporters didn't involve the Green Brigade. You know, things like the pyro and stuff like that. I think also as well is that if you look at, we're not going to go down this road, but it looks like we are. But if you look at kind of wider football support, there's a generational thing, and what you've got now is, you've got the first generation of younger supporters going to games who've never known anything different from all-seater stadium, but who have wider access to how they see supporters supporting their clubs all across Europe in certain ways. And there's a new generation of youngsters who want to support their team in a certain way. And that's probably different from when we were supporting Celtic as teenagers.
Yeah, and it's not to say that we were right and they're wrong or vice versa.
No,
it's your point of this has been replicated all over Europe.
Yeah.
In that, yes, football violence was replicated all over Europe, but that's something that people can, in general, most human beings can say that's not right.
Yeah.
The modern culture that younger fans are doing, there's an element of football's got to get its head around how best to deal with it without its default knee-jerk reaction is to crack down on it.
Well, default media reaction and default police and stewarding action, because it's a new phenomenon, so they don't know how to handle it, and they're actually making judgments and taking actions based on how they think football supporters behaved 20, 30 years ago. And it's pretty clear, you know, almost trying to be objective about this, that in actual fact, some of the things that the Green Brigade do and some of the things that, supporter groups of other clubs do is fundamentally different from what went on 20, 30 years ago. You know, and, you know, jumping around or lateral movement or whatever is actually quite different from, and it's quite positive compared with some of the negative collective supporting actions that, were taken kind of 20, 30 years ago.
Which then gets back into how the authorities deal with it, because how do you allow the lateral movement without the boring old farts like you and I getting pissed off with it because it's happening right next to us?
Well, I don't get pissed off.
You know what I mean? Yes.
I don't get pissed off. I wouldn't join in. I'm not fit enough. It's the match day commander who's sitting in that, you know, contract, along with his colleagues, looking across at something and thinking, that doesn't look right. Therefore, we're going to clamp down on that and stop it. And, you know, that really, there needs to be, I don't know, there almost needs to be a voice in the media or, you know, a supporters' federation or whatever that actually says, look, this behaviour, this fan behaviour, this group behaviour, it shouldn't be seen as a threat, and it should be embraced and actually welcomed. And we'll know when you know, fans step out of line. But at the moment, none of this is stepping out of line.
So, mentioned touching the fans, to get back on to Lee Griffiths, just how would you deal with what he did if you were Neil Lennon or Peter Lawwell?
Well, I suppose I should declare my stance, because obviously there were a lot of people unhappy when he was first signed, but I didn't kind of really take that view. I thought it would be a good signing, and I actually thought Celtic would be good for him, if you know what I mean,
yep.
In terms of them recognising that he's at a big club now and that he would have to behave differently and kind of conduct himself in a different way. So even when he was caught on video singing the first song about Hearts Going Bust, well, you know, at one level you just think, well, that's just, you know, a Hibs fan, which we all know he is.
Yep.
Just having a bit of banter and a bit of good time. So even when that came out, you know, I didn't think anything of it. And I think that was probably felt by quite a lot of the support, because certainly at the previous away game, after he'd been seen singing it, the support gave him, you know, kind of massive reception, really,
yeah.
And great backing. But then, obviously, we then see the second video. And, well, as I say, it's completely unacceptable. And I think, you know, there's certain things that are said about, you know, well, you know, this is going through a kind of, it will go through a police procedure, and whether he actually before he's convicted, whether he's, you know, stands accused of something. I actually think that there won't be enough evidence to charge him. I don't think that'll stack up, but I think that's almost irrelevant. I just think the club, you know, should be having a word with him and getting an honest answer out of him. And my initial reaction was that he should just be sacked, which some people might say is quite harsh. I've pulled back from that slightly, and think, well, we need to see, as a support, Lee Griffiths doing things that are you know, counter to the behaviour that he was showing in that video, mm-hmm. and that are positive things, and a real recognition that what he did was wrong, and that he's going to change his ways, and you know, that's being done through a kind of an education process. You know, we need to see actions from him. It's almost like, you know, we need to see Lee Griffiths doing some kind of like Celtic community service.
Yeah.
Where he's actually doing, you know, and aligning himself with all of the values and the morals that we hold dear as a football club, and you know, the recognition of our roots, you know. And I think, you know, I mean, it's absolutely clear why so many Celtic supporters are angry about it, because of our origins and where we come from. But Lee Griffiths isn't the only one who would be caught, if you like, singing that kind of song or expressing that kind of casual racist sentiment. You know, there are others around as well, which is why I, you know, made the point earlier about the Green Brigade, that if the club do take action against Lee Griffiths and there is some kind of education element to his rehabilitation, for want of a better phrase, then, you know, Celtic have got to hammer home that message to all the wider support.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've said on a podcast, I was on a train a couple of years ago and there was a group of young lads singing about they'd rather be a something than a Hun. And there was guys bigger than me on the train shaking their heads at them. And I said, you don't sing that. And you certainly don't sing it when you're wearing Celtic colours. And then you told me where to F off.
Yeah.
And the thing that annoyed me more than anything at that time was there was plenty of other guys who were shaking their heads. And as soon as I spoke, they all found their feet far more interesting to look at than anything else.
Yeah.
And I ended up, to be fair, they stopped singing it after they told me to F off.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it would be useful to a wider message, as you've said. We're not all, you know, with 60,000 people at a game, not every single human being at that match is going to be a perfect person. I think Celtic doing something with Lee Griffiths on a wider educational. So we've talked about the disciplinary part of Lee Griffiths. The other thing that we just touched on before we got onto that was Commons, Griffiths and Stokes playing up front and the movement that they've got. And I think you're talking about Stokes at times wants to run wide, Griffiths at times wants to run wide, and obviously Commons is historically a midfield player.
Mm-hmm.
I think what makes the three of them work well together is one of the three of them makes the central run.
Absolutely, and that's my earlier point about the fact is that even though they like to move out, it, obviously that pulls defences around, which is a good thing. But the when one of the players is going wide, then the other one knows to move into a central position, and they know how to exploit that as a collective unit much better. Than we've previously seen. I think the other thing as well is, quite quietly, I think Johansson has actually made quite an impression.
Yeah.
In that he, you know, people at one level said, "Oh well, he's just a like-for-like replacement of Joe Ledley," but he's not actually.
No, he's not.
He's much more positive in his. In his actions and his movements, and I think he's got a little bit more pace about him. And so, you know, you talk about Griffiths, Stokes and Commons linking up, but I think, I mean, you can go to the whole team, but I think Johansson works well as part of that unit as well.
I mean, Neil McCallum on our site was not a big fan of Ledley, didn't think he offered enough on a regular basis. And my defence of Ledley was always that when Lennon played that 4-2, either it was a 4-2-4 or a 4-2-2-2, but the middle two was very wide.
When it Ledley wasn't a 4-2-4, Harry, I've told you that.
It wasn't, I know, but it turned, a lot of the time it turned into being a 4-2-4.
The principle being, we had two midfield players who were at times were quite isolated on their own in the middle, Ledley and Brown. And it was in those games that I thought Ledley was least effective.
Well, it was, and the reason is because presumably it was under instruction that when you've only got that kind of two central midfielders that you've both got to sit and partly protect the defence. So Ledley was never going to make those kind of runs into the opposition penalty area that you did see him do in certain games during the time that he was at Celtic.
Yeah, and in fact, my criticism this season, the only bad performances I think we've put in this season has been when the manager's got the system wrong.
Yeah.
Every European performance that we played poorly, the manager had the wrong system. We're one person short in midfield. But having said all of that, I still think Johansson is offering more than Ledley offered.
Yeah.
Doing the same role.
Yeah. I think the other thing for me as well is, and obviously you see Johansson playing kind of in that leftish role, Stokes maybe drifts out a little bit left, Griffiths, he can come in off the right. But one of the reasons why I think the attacking player has worked better this season is that we've seen Izaguirre back to his best.
Yeah.
I think he's had a terrific season, Izaguirre. And I was a little bit disappointed that in the SPFL Premiership Team of the Year that he wasn't included. And, you know, there's a few names that are being bandied about at the moment within the Scottish Premiership where I'm not actually sure that those players have been as good and as consistent as is being made out in the media. You know, so they obviously went for Robertson from Dundee United for left back. Mm-hmm. But I think I've not seen Robertson as much as I've seen Izaguirre, obviously, but you'd be hard pushed to see anybody who's had a better season in that position than Izaguirre.
Yeah, and the other thing about that attacking sense of Celtic, where although I've just talked about the 4-2-4 and you said it's not 4-2-4, actually in many games it's 2-4-4. And that our fullbacks are so far up the park.
Yeah, and that's part of the modern game. You know, you expect that to happen. It happened slightly less on the right this season because
I was just going to say, considering that we've missed out on Lustig and Matthews for so much of the season, and I get the impression that the players have been asked to fill in at right back have been given an instruction to be a bit more conservative so they're not caught out.
Well, I think that's also about the learning process as well. For, you know, Fish is a young lad. He presumably he's told, you know, first and foremost you're part of the defensive unit, mm-hmm. so don't take big risks. And it's also about him learning the game at that level. And I actually like Fisher. I think he's done well. I mean, I first saw him at pre-season friendly against Brentford, and you know, he played very well in that game. And you were left thinking, well, is this another young player who's never going to really, you know, get a chance in the first team, but because of circumstances he did do, and I think he did well.
I was just somebody shutting the door loudly.
Okay. Right.
No, I think Fisher did well, and which again gets onto the quality across the team that we've got. So Chris Commons won the Players' Player of the Year last night.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I, to be honest with you, when the nominations came out, I actually thought, well, yeah, he's probably going to win it. And I think when the nominations come out, they already know who's won it, because I think they take the top four.
Yeah.
They take the players the four players with the most votes. So they'll already know. And what tends to happen is, you know, people tend to go for usually people who've scored the most goals in a season. So I always kind of felt that Commons was going to win it. But I think for me, my both my Celtic Player of the Year and Player of the Year in Scotland for me was Virgil
Samaras.
No, I think Virgil van Dijk, he's just absolutely strolled through the season. And I think, you know, it's not just a case of him strolling through the season. I think he's shown in this first year that, you know, he's got excellent qualities and he's used those to good effect.
Yeah, and there's talk of people talking about him moving on already. There's almost an element I felt that this season's Champions League campaign reminded me a bit of Tony Mowbray's Europa League campaign. Mm. Pretty much almost as soon as it started, you didn't think it was going anywhere.
Yeah.
There's a part of me would like a real decent Champions League campaign where right up to the last minute you think, you genuinely believe there's a chance.
Yeah.
Or there's a likelihood that we're going to get to the last 16 or Europa League football.
Mm.
And I would like, as much as possible, that we retain the existing squad, because I touched earlier about our poorest performances being where I felt the manager had got the system wrong.
Yeah.
I actually felt just because Hooper had gone and Wanyama had gone, and Lennon keeps talking about £20 million of talent from the season before's Champions League, I can't quite place where that went, but anyway, I just got the impression that the manager, since about January, has really known what his best first 11 and best system is.
Yeah.
With the current squad, and particularly in midfield with Beaton and now Henderson coming into it.
Yeah.
I think he also, and obviously with Mulgrew and Brown and Johansson, I think in the midfield, more or less a 4-3-3, which he can probably change to some form of 4-5-1 if he needs to.
Yeah.
I think the manager pretty much knows, has got a system that he didn't have in the first half of the season. I have a real preference that we can, as best we can, keep this current squad together so that he's not reinventing the wheel through the middle of a Champions League season next season.
Well, I think that's true. Not many people had heard of Virgil van Dijk.
No.
But Virgil van Dijk is straight ahead of Kelvin Hudson. Beaton's not figured as much this season, but Beaton is actually a quality player.
Yes.
You know, it was a bit negative in the Champions League when he came on for that short time and then got red carded, presumably because he was, you know, trying too hard, you know, almost to make an impression. But Beaton looks a quality player.
I also felt, just before he picked up his injury, I also felt that Lennon had just got his head around how best to play him.
I found it interesting, Kyle's comments the other week, which obviously he's going to be going in the summer. And, you know, he was almost kind of like blaming the culture of Scottish football for him not having progressed. Well, that's a little bit of an excuse, I think, but there is possibly something in that. In that some players just can't acclimatise to it, and so therefore the careers don't move forward. But I think Beaton will acclimatise to it. I think you're absolutely right about Henderson. Henderson looks a decent young prospect. You know, and again, people talk about we're at that point in the season where we should be bringing youngsters through and giving youngsters a chance. I think Celtic get it. Okay with the youngsters. You can't be bringing 5-6 youngsters through all at the same time.
Yep.
Okay, if they're absolutely exceptional, you know, and they're immediately playing like players who've got kind of 3 or 4 years first team experience under the belt, then that's different. But if you look back season on season, you know, we've brought a fair number of youngsters through, and enough to suggest that, you know, what's going on at Lennox Town and what's going on in the youth system and the youth academy is kind of by and large working, you know.
Yeah, so my only concern actually is the general. I think it would be a surprise to the Celtic coaching staff if they had Fraser Foster as the goalkeeper next season. I'm not trying to get rid of him, I'm just reading between the lines of what everybody said in it, and I'm only slight concern about that is transfers are not done very often for people going to the World Cup immediately prior to the World Cup?
No, well, out of all the players who we, you know, apart from some of the fringe players who you know will be going, or people who are out of contract, of the big value players, if you like, Forster is the most obvious one to be leaving, because I think he will, despite what Mark Guidi says, I think he will be in the England squad.
And the only problem that we then have is, firstly, if England get, I know it's unlikely, if England get to the semi-finals of the World Cup, our first Champions League qualifier, I think, is 5 days after the third, fourth playoff.
Is that right? Uh-huh. Okay.
So we'll not have him for that. And then the other problem, obviously, is goalkeepers are probably the one position we can... It would look obvious what's happened if we go out and sign a high-profile replacement before we've punted him, or before he's been sold.
Yeah.
So as a consequence, we'll be going through the Champions League qualification and possibly have to countenance selling him the week before the last game.
The reality of the Champions League qualifiers, though, because we're a seeded team, I mean, it's wrong that we should have to go through those qualifying stages, in my opinion. But those first two qualifying rounds, they should be relatively straightforward.
Yeah.
You know, and if Zaluska's still with us, then, you know, he's more than capable of kind of taking us through those games. You know, look at this season. You know, you're playing Cliftonville, you know, so no disrespect to Cliftonville, you know, but you know, the quality is not really there.
Yeah.
In the opposition, so we shouldn't worry about whether Foster's still at a World Cup or whether he may be going. By the time you get through to maybe the final, we've got stiffer opposition, but
yeah.
not the first two.
Yeah, and that's my concern, that actually the tide that we might lose him might be just as we've got that last game. Because...
Possibly.
Repeating on last season, from memory, we had something like 2 days between knowing we were in the Champions League and the end of the transfer window.
Yeah.
But
I think the other thing as well is if Forster goes, unless we get a really silly bid for him, I think Van Dijk may be with us for one more season.
Yeah. I think it may be easier to retain Van Dijk if he doesn't go to the World Cup as well.
Absolutely, and I mean, it is surprising that he's not in the squad. But you know, I mean, some of the English Premiership games I've watched this season, you're kind of thinking, actually, that defence would be improved with a Van Dijk in it. You know,
yes,
and presumably there will be a lot of scouts who will be looking around on a professional basis and thinking the same thing.
Yeah, and counter-arguing to what I've just said, though, is the only thing is, Van Dijk might think to himself, if I wasn't playing in Glasgow, I might be in that World Cup squad. You don't know.
Yeah. But there again, people said that about Forster.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's nowhere more parochial than the English Premier League for kind of being arrogant enough to say, if you don't play in the English Premier League, then you're not going to get in the England squad.
Yeah.
So for Forster to get in the England squad, you know, that maybe, you know, proves to Van Dijk in the Dutch equation that, you know, if he keeps on putting in good performances, then, you know, he would get in the Dutch squad.
And I suppose the overriding thing for the manager as well, who's reading between the lines of comments that he's made, I don't think he sees himself being Celtic manager forever, for all of them. The best way to get a really good move to a club and not end up what Gary Hooper's done at Norwich is actually to be playing Champions League football in the last 16 Champions League football.
Yeah, absolutely. And interestingly enough, just on Hooper, I mean, I think I tweeted it really early in the season that I had, you know, it's kind of slightly tongue-in-cheek that I thought Hooper might be playing Championship football next season. And that does look likely now.
Yeah, and I have a concern that he's now got a career. I a bit like Huckabee. Was it Huckabee?
Was
one of those players who would play lots of games and score lots of goals in the Championship. His team would then get promoted to the Premiership, he wouldn't play, he would then leave and go to a top half of the Championship. I suspect that might end up being Gary Hooper's career.
Kevin Phillips, Mark II.
Yes, that type of thing. Maybe not quite as Kevin Phillips had a wee bit more, but that type of thing of you start to become perceived as a guy who can score in the Championship and not in the Premiership.
Mm.
And that's partly because when you get to the Premiership, you're playing with teams who don't get any chances.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, Hooper is, I think Hooper is a, you know, he's a mid-table Premiership proven striker, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's up to a manager to set out a team that plays to Hooper's strengths. And I'm not sure Chris Hughton did that. I mean,
no, and I'm just concerned that he may not get the chance to do that.
No, no.
But enough about Celtic players past and present. There are more pressing concerns in Scottish football, which is the possibility of Armageddon 2.
Armageddon 2, yeah. Oh, God, the last 2 years is just... where do you start with this?
Where do you start? I mean, I had a physio appointment on Friday morning, and it was on the NHS, but the guy's works part-time for Rangers, under-15s, under-16s. And he made passing comment about Murray Park, and he said, oh, but who knows what my job will be, because I've got the 120-day reviews coming out today, and I wonder what it will say. And I jokingly said to him, do you want me to write it out just now? It'll take me 30 seconds. You spend too much money, you've not got enough coming in. So, there was no real surprise to Rangers watchers about it. I mean, they've given enough assurances for me that the thing about it was, if that's what they're saying in public, how dire is it? Is the report that's been for private consumption?
Absolutely. And I think the thing for me as well is it's kind of this like collective media reaction that, you know, what else were they expecting from the 120-day review? You know, it set out kind of fairly starkly what went on. But, you know, just literally a couple of weeks ago, the Rangers Football Club Limited accounts kind of fell into the lap, which kind of said the same thing. And a couple of months before that, the Rangers PLC interim accounts kind of fell into the lap, which said the same thing. And every time they get this kind of information about kind of like, you know, financial calamities and financial mismanagement, it's almost as though they start with a blank piece of paper and say, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Who's responsible for this? And you kind of think, well, it's just a continuum. And the reason why it's a continuum, which more Celtic supporters seem to realise, and I don't know why this is, they just get it, whereas lots and lots of Rangers supporters don't seem to get it, is that it's a very basic business model that they're not adopting, and that is, you understand what your income is, and then you live within your means.
Yeah.
You spend. They don't seem to get that, you know, and that's why there's this constant craving for, you know, Dave King, and they're only citing Dave King because they can't see any other potential sugar daddy who's going to throw millions, at the club.
And as you say, you know, it's where do you start, you know, on Dave King? Where do you start on Dave King? I mean, very simply, he's got an £84 million bill for unpaid taxes in South Africa, and he's talking about chucking £50 million at Rangers if he takes ownership. Has anybody actually said, Dave, do you have £150 million?
Yeah, that's a very important point you're making there, because I've thought about that and thought, well, okay, people like Dave King, they will always have kind of, you know, far more than you and me squirreled away somewhere, but it can't be to any vast extent in terms of availability of cash, simply as you say, because he's had fines to pay, so he's had to find the means to pay those fines. Although obviously there's some talk over the weekend that, that there's some potential reneging on that. So I mean, which makes it even more damning in terms of there doesn't seem to be any moral compass within the media.
No, and
that actually says, look, this guy may have Mega Millions, but we're not going to back him and we're not going to talk him up because, you know, his portfolio of kind of lying and tax evasion and, you know, generally kind of shafting the South African tax man and the wider South African economy, it's something that we wouldn't want to touch.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that in all of it has struck me about him. Why nobody has said he's a convicted tax evader. We don't want this type of person involved in Scottish football. Not only does he fail the 5 points of the SFA's fit and proper test because he's a convicted tax evader, he also fails it because he was on the board of a football club that went through an insolvency event in the last 5 years.
Yeah. But I think that media stance it's part of a wider collective management of the club, the media, and there's various other parties, and it's almost this collective. We don't care. We will do what we want, to make the club be in their eyes the number one club in Scotland, and. You get to this point where you just think, that's just right. It's just fundamentally wrong. It's just fundamentally wrong. And obviously, the last time that they tried to do this when they were in crisis before they were liquidated, you know, it was good that people in Scottish football, like Turnbull Hutton and others, actually stood up and said, you know, we're actually not going to accept this and we're not going to tolerate this kind of behaviour. And this kind of bullying, but it's come about again. I think the thing that's complicated it for them this time, and I know you know that I've used this phrase. It's the lexicon of liquidation.
Yeah.
And because they've portrayed themselves in a certain way, i.e., still being the same club. If they head towards administration as a new club. Let me make that clear. That is when people will kind of completely go around in circles on this and contradict themselves no end. Because again, people in the media, they've literally made it up. You know, I mean, in the last few days, all the talk of when we came out of administration last time. Well, when was that?
Yeah.
It didn't happen. There's a company called BDO that are currently taking that supposed entity that came out of administration through a liquidation process at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's a point I remember making to a Rangers fan at the time that they started this, as you say, lexicon of liquidation, and started the nonsense of stuff. And I said, so why were Rangers deducted points when they went into administration?
Why didn't they play in Europe the following season?
Yeah, because they went into administration. Exactly. So, if you go along the lines of this nonsense of there's a separate football club business and a parent holding company business, then for some strange reason, the football authorities say, well, administration, we pin the blame on the football club. Liquidation, we pin the blame on the parent company.
Mm-hmm.
So surely, if it's only the parent company that went into liquidation, it was the parent company that went into administration as well, and the football club should never have had any points deduction ever. No football club should get points deductions, because it's a parent company who misbehaved. But of course, that's utter nonsense. And as you say, when was the announcement made that Rangers had come out of administration?
Yeah. I think the other thing for me as well is, if you look at the English FA's rules and handbook, same with the Scottish FA, in the kind of introductory information, there's a very clear sentence, and it actually says, where a club is a company. And so what they recognise in England is that there are football clubs at every level, you know, from professional through to semi-professional, yep, through to amateur. And what they're saying is all those entities are clubs, mm-hmm, but sometimes those clubs are also limited companies. And if somebody were to make the same statement in Scotland and say, you are a football club, and in some cases, your football club may be a limited company, but they are one and the same thing. They're not two separate entities.
Yes.
And that you know, for them to kind of have created that smokescreen, and, well, quite frankly, it's a lie, and for, you know, them presumably then to call favours in it, you know, in a judicial sense, for people to actually kind of almost kind of perpetuate that smokescreen and that myth, it's going to come back and bite them. And I think at the moment they appear to me to be, I mean, obviously they're on the brink of administration, despite what people are saying officially from their club. But I think this time we'll actually start to see a splintering. And we'll actually, you know, we could see even more kind of factionalism.
Yeah, and, you know,
and you may get to the point where people will start to claim as groups that, you know, they are Rangers, and those other lot over there are not Rangers.
And I think I do wonder if King's lining up for something that, well, a couple of things you touched on there. I always said I could have an understanding of the concept of the parent company going into liquidation and the football team being hived off separately. If Rangers, the company, had been an umbrella company for a number of sporting organisations, for example, yep, say they had an ice hockey team and a football team and
basketball,
a basketball team, and the debt had actually been racked up by the basketball team trying to compete with European basketball, and Rangers had gone off separately because, although they were part of the parent company's debt. But one of the reasons why it's just utter nonsense is the parent company only traded to trade a football team based on that principle of there's two elements to it. So all the debts were created by trading the football team. To then separate them off.
Yep.
But I remember last time talking about one of the things that when they were all debating who was going to take it. What would the SFA do if you set up, at the same time as they were about to go down to the liquidation route, if someone had gone to, you know, Scottish people, business people had got together and got Walter Smith, you know, this was prior to him being the chairman, if you got Walter Smith as the chairman, you'd blah, 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 and you'd then gone to the SFA and said, we'll lease Hampden.
Mm-hmm.
And over the summer, we'll lease Hampden and we think we can get the majority of players and the management of the old Rangers, and you had two competing Rangers saying this is the real Rangers, because this is the Rangers that's got the heritage and the support of the football supporters. That's one that's just been made up by some carpetbaggers.
Yeah,
that'd be a real dilemma. And then the administrators would have to sell the assets separately, which would be the stadium. I do wonder whether King's thinking of a similar type of route this time by setting up his Ibrox 1972 Limited.
It's funny you should say that, because I kind of thought something similar. And what he's obviously doing is he knows the way, you know, to get the backing is to get the supporters groups on his side, which is what he appears to be doing. But the thing is, where it falls down for him is, A, he's X thousand miles away.
Yep.
And B, there doesn't seem to be any sense of intelligence or urgency in terms of some of those kind of fans, spokespeople that you see on Newsnight Scotland or Scotland Tonight or whatever. Mm-hmm. They just don't seem to have the capacity to actually organise themselves and quite frankly back the right people.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, you know, this is what annoys me, because you get people like Hugh Keevins and others in the media desperate, because they're desperate to maintain the old firm,
mm-hmm,
they then latch on to, well, what we had 20 years ago was Fergus McCann. There was a Celtic were in crisis. He came in with the money, and the supporters backed him, and everything turned out okay. So what we'll do is we'll invent a kind of a similar scenario 20 years later, where Dave King is the equivalent of Fergus McCann. Well, no, he isn't. Mm-hmm. And they'll also say, well, this supposed grouping of Rangers fan groups is the same as Salt for Change. Well, no, it isn't, because you can just tell from their actions, or lack of action in terms of what's happening now, compared with what Salt for Change were doing, compared with what Fergus McCann was doing, compared with the likes of David Lowe, you know, who obviously was doing all those things behind the scenes in terms of actually affecting change and making sure that change would happen for the benefit of the club and the benefit of the supporters. And so you don't see any of that.
No, and part of their problem in the initial bit was almost a self, an element of entitlement.
Yeah.
We are Rangers. We are the establishment club, so we should be getting fixed by somebody with big chunks of money here. Yeah. And even now, that's pervasive in a lot of what's being talked about. I think in a podcast with Eddie 2 years ago, when we were going through the administration, I also talked about their mentality. They're like junkies to money.
Absolutely. And why would you make those kind of official statements where everything is contextualised around what you perceive to be a rival that is in a better position than you?
Yeah.
You know, surely your starting point is to say, you know, how is that club gonna go forward and become a strong club again, regardless of other clubs that are involved in the league? And, you know, I mean, Dave King kind of just showed it there, you know, when he was kind of saying about, you know, we've got to act now to stop Celtic from potentially getting 10 in a row. Well, that's not the starting point for any of this.
You've got to act now to build the foundations of a football club that can be trading and playing football.
Yeah, absolutely. What you should be really saying is, and this is what I say, most Celtic supporters can see this straight away. You know, this is a £20 million turnover business. Therefore, how are we actually going to get our running costs to 17, 18 million so that we can generate a little bit of cash each year so that we can invest steadily in either the infrastructure or the playing squad on a proper basis? And if I'm being brutally honest, this is basically what Aberdeen have done, Dundee United have done, Hibs have done, and what Hearts will probably do going forward.
Yeah.
And in that sense, that is the business model for Scottish football. And if you look at Celtic, that's the business model that they've adopted.
Yeah.
It's just that the pot that they've got, that they can generate in terms of turnover happens to be very large. And it's likely to be for the foreseeable future. But still live within the means, and they don't seem to understand that.
They just want a quick fix. I mean, do you know, actually, of late, what's been going through my mind about the fact that we grafted away, rebuilt our club, and, you know, put solid foundations in to now be able to be in the position we want, and they want an instant quick fix. What happened to the Protestant work ethic that Scotland's supposed to be famous for?
Somebody once said to me very early in this that they must be the only Protestants that don't protest. That was very early days. I think that was before they went into admin, or it was just after they went into admin. They actually don't understand the economic environment that they're actually operating in.
No,
as I say, every other club in Scotland is operating within its means. So what makes them think that they can be a club that operates outside that? If you look at the English Premiership, as a kind of similar economic paradigm, well, all the clubs are in debt, or most of the clubs are in debt. But the thing is, they've got access to such a wealth of finance because it's such a well-funded league. And there's lots of money swirling around in terms of parachute payments. And not only that, they are actually financed by kind of mega-rich individuals or mega-rich corporations. So they're in a completely different place. You cannot possibly replicate that model in Scotland.
No, and that's, you know, one of the things that when I've spoken to people about people saying Celtic need to speculate to accumulate, even now, in terms of to try and get us into the last 16 or last 8 of Champions League football, one of the things I'll say to people is the other bit in relation to spending money, and you're saying about the English environment, you also then have to look at, in the short to medium term, if you are bringing on debt as a way to develop your business, does the market that you operate in have capacity for you to get to the turnover you need to get to in order to make that debt worthwhile?
Absolutely, and that's another thing that people miss from the Fergus McCann era, because you know, people tend to soundbite these things now. I know we think about it in a bit more depth and understand what Fergus McCann did as supporters. But again, the media, what they tend to do is say, oh yeah, well, Fergus McCann, he came in with a 5-year plan and he did exactly what he said he was going to do and then he left. But the devil's in the devil's in the detail, really, or the good things are in the detail in terms, in Celtic's case. What Fergus McCann did was, he didn't just rebuild the stadium, he rebuilt the stadium and then filled it.
Yeah.
So by definition, he grew the pot.
Yes.
And he grew the pot from, you know, an average turnover that was, or a turnover that was based on an average attendance of, you know, in the 20,000s to an average attendance where you got over 50,000 season ticket holders. Well, it doesn't take a genius to work out how that transforms the club turnover-wise. And okay, we've had some drop-off since then, and the club have discounted some of the income, in terms of reducing prices on season tickets. But the pot is still overall larger, whereas with Rangers, they're not expanding their customer base.
No.
They're not growing the fans. In fact, what's happened is two things. The fact that the fans are starting to dwindle away, regardless of all the kind of supposed 50,000 full houses that they're portraying in the media. But secondly, they actually massively reduced their income streams by reducing season ticket prices.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, you could say, well, they had to because they were playing in the bottom tier of Scottish football. But that's the reality. So they're not growing their pot for living within their means. They're actually contracting it.
Yeah, and, again, getting back to your point of people being surprised that they're saying, well, you know, we might not be able to, we need a significant or substantial number of season books to stay the same, to be able to trade through. Well, that's not a surprise, because with a season book money and £22 million of a share issue, they needed an emergency loan to trade through a 12-month period or a 40-month period. So patently, they are living circa £20 to £25 million beyond their means.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the helpful things, for boring accountants and people who look at finances, you know, Graham Wallace kind of spelled out where that supposedly 70-odd million had come from and where it had been spent. And, you know, people tend to focus on, like, you know, the player wage costs and the salaries of non-playing staff. But one of the figures that you should look at is the other operating expenses, the non-wages expenditure at Ibrox. And it's huge. It's absolutely huge. And those are not one-off costs. Those are the running costs of their operation.
Mm-hmm.
and they before they've kicked a ball, before they've signed a player, they've got a massive, massive outgoing against their turnover, which at the margins they could possibly reduce, but they probably can't materially reduce it to any great extent, you know. So, for instance, I think the Lennox Town costs are something in the same order, where it's, you know, it's maybe 2 or 3 million a year to kind of make sure Lennox Town functions and it's properly maintained and all the rest of it. Well, Murray Park, when they developed that was the same. It's something like 2 million running costs per year, unless you just run Murray Park down. And it just becomes poorly maintained, or they sell it.
Yeah, and one of the things that, again, you wonder if journalists actually asked this, because I was taken aback when, obviously, they had the statement, and then Graham Wallace had his, obviously, had his press conference explaining the 120-day review. And BBC Scotland, on the radio and on television, their main story was, Rangers are planning a £30 million rights issue.
Yeah.
Which, if you read between the lines, the obvious answer is, why do you need to do a £30 million rights issue? Whether you can achieve the rights issues, let's park that conversation for a minute. Why do you need to do it? Yeah. Because we don't have enough money to run for a whole year. Right, okay. So what are your chances of doing a £30 million rights issue when the current value of the club after your last year issue was 15 million quid? Who's going to do the £30 million rights issue with you? And if that doesn't succeed, how are you going to trade for the rest of the season? And you obviously have no plans, because the obvious thing would be, what you would do is you would cut your cloth accordingly.
Absolutely.
Right, and prior to the share issue.
Yeah, this is the thing with the quality of journalism is absolutely dire. Because if you actually looked at that statement, which is the same in all cases with a new share issue, you have to get existing shareholder approval to do that. Well, the simple journalistic thing is then to go back and say, right, okay, let's go back and have a look and take that face value and speculate as to whether the existing shareholder base would approve that share issue. Because they would have rights on that. And all you need to do is look at who are the main shareholders in Rangers currently. Mm-hmm. And you would quickly come to a view and say, I'm not sure that those shareholders would approve a new share issue, because they themselves probably don't want to throw any more money at what has been, in some cases, a disaster for them.
Yeah.
So you've got reputable companies like Hargreave Hale, all of these shareholders have got less than 10%. But basically, they would say, well, actually, we're not going to vote for a share issue because we've already got our fingers burnt. Mm-hmm. And what they conveniently forget is that, which they've been told time and again, that some of the shares are proxied over to the Easdales. Mm-hmm. So the Easdales, with their proxies, they've got something like over 20% of the shareholding. Well, you know, they're not gonna pony millions more of a supposed 30 million share issue. So they'll vote against, and they've probably got enough of the other what they keep calling institutional investors that will align with them to get them to, you know, more than 50% of the Celtic forums. But you just don't see the journalists and the mainstream media in Scotland discussing those kinds of scenarios. it's immediately portrayed as, yep, Dave King's coming in, 30 million's going in, there'll be a new share issue, Rangers will win the Scottish Premiership in 2016-17. Mm-hmm. End of story. And, you know, the reality is just a million miles away from that.
And no matter what we see, someone like Graham Wallace is not stupid.
No, he's not stupid, no.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's what slightly amuses me in this, in that, you know, they're all now asking for him to be suspended or sacked or whatever, but he's probably, out of all the charlatans and carpetbaggers and crooks that have been involved in the club over the last 2 years, he's probably the one with the best executive reputation, if you know what I mean.
And so he's not stupid. He knows the challenges of getting a share issue that we just discussed. And he knows that they won't generate enough money from season book sales to play until this time next season. I just keep thinking in the back of my mind, there's something planned at Ibrox in June.
Yeah.
If the other thing is they're only going to tinker about with staff, you know, your point about the wages there, if they're only going to tinker about at the edges and maybe make 100, you know, quarter of a million, 300 grand's worth of wages savings from the type of people they're going to make redundant. I just keep thinking they must have an alternative plan.
Well, I think at that point they'll just slip back into admin and, you know, despite what anybody says, I still think that there's a sale and lease back of the assets in there somewhere. Or they'll get security over the assets. The problem for them is that at that point, Craig White would probably rear his head again.
Yep.
And make a claim on those assets. Which, you know, which again, it's in every financial statement that's come out that is in dispute.
So after the, what's your 122nd review of their 120 day review?
My 122nd review is that they will just continue to implode. I suspect that you'll end up with about kind of three or four different factions amongst the support. They'll just fragment and they'll go into administration. And who knows what will happen after that.
And, you know, who knows if they go into administration. There's a part of me that doesn't really want Hibs to go down next season, because I can't stand the media will be talking about the Championship being a beta league.
Yeah.
However, the one thing about if Hibs did go down, Hibs do have the wherewithal to put a better quality of squad together than anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Bennett and Hearts have done what Rangers should have done, which is just play the youngsters and give them a years of experience.
Yeah.
I do think there's a challenge for Rangers to get into a playoff position next season if Hibs went down as well.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you, I think Hibs will survive. I think there's just something where they'll pick something up, and they may not go down. But regardless of whether they go down or not, there's two things there for me. I think Rangers really will find it difficult in the Championship, in whatever guise they exist. And I think what we still probably need to do as supporters of a club in the Scottish Premiership is to make sure that the mainstream media talk up the top league in the game. Where else in the world would you have a media that would attempt to collectively focus their efforts on a lower tier league? You know, it beggars belief, really.
Yeah, although to be fair to Radio Scotland, I think partly because they've not had any interaction with Rangers, and again, I do wonder whether they have spoken to the media and said now, or sorry, the football authorities and said, we want to make sure that none of the money that we pay for broadcast rights goes to Rangers Football Club, because they don't fulfil their contractual obligations.
Yeah, I mean, I'm BBC is not an organisation that I'm familiar with in terms of how it manages those kinds of situations. The way I look at it is that in my view, and this might be naive and completely incorrect, but I think a lot of this comes down to the presenters. And what you've seen over the last 2 years is you've seen the likes of Richard Gordon and Jim Spence, you know, having more prominent roles, and I'd add Stuart Cosgrove to that as well.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, they're all kind of fairly high profile. I mean, they're good at what they do, but they're all fairly high profile supporters of clubs in the Scottish Premiership.
Yeah.
And I think between them, whether knowingly or unknowingly, they've collectively thought, we're not going to allow you know, this Rangers situation to completely dominate the landscape of Scottish football. Whereas what you've then got is you've got both BBC journalists and much of the mainstream media, which is kind of west of Scotland based, who are desperate to kind of hang on to the coattails of the Rangers entity, not even the Rangers story.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got the likes of Al Lamont, obviously Chick Young, which, you know, I mean, Chick Young should just be removed from BBC now. He's actually an embarrassment in terms of some of the stances that he's taken on certain issues, particularly with regards to the likes of David Murray.
Yeah.
You know, David Murray ruined Scottish football. He effectively took probably 5 to 10 years proper football development out of most of the top flight clubs in Scotland through his recklessness of running Rangers and everybody else at other clubs thinking that they needed to spend to just to keep up. I think the likes of Richard Gordon, Jim Spence, those people Stuart Cosgrove will try and make sure that the voice for the top league is still heard. And, you know, I mean, I've watched some of the SPFL Premiership games this season, and, you know, there's a decent standard of football, decent quality, some decent players. Everybody's been talking about the emergence of youngsters at other clubs. And okay, we can have a debate about whether they really do have the quality and whether they could become Celtic players over time.
Yeah.
But whether they do or they don't, they're actually enhancing the league. And I mean, we shouldn't forget, and we've probably spent a lot of time talking about Rangers, but most people will have watched that Dundee United Rangers game. Dundee United did not play well that day.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other performances that they've had this season, but they were streets ahead of Rangers.
They were, and the other thing that I, getting back to you, the commentators there, and a comment that a Rangers supporter made to me at the beginning of this whole process, and said, "Oh, there's a schism being created in Scottish football that will take decades to heal." And I said, "There's no schism. There's you on one side and everybody else on the other."
Yeah.
And that's not a schism implies that there's an even divide.
We tend to immerse ourselves in Celtic things, and, you know, we kind of follow fellow fans on Twitter, and we're in on the Celtic forums. But then occasionally, what you see on your timeline, or you hear from another club, or you watch a game like the Dundee United game against Rangers, and it's absolutely clear that the supporters of other clubs feel exactly the same way as we do about Rangers.
Yep, and I just sensed across Radio Scotland after the Rangers Dundee United game, I sensed everybody was chuffed to bits.
Yep.
There was just a general sense of good humour on Radio Scotland in particular. I very rarely listen to Clyde now, particularly on a Saturday. I accidentally had Clyde on going to a Celtic game about a month ago. And I say, it took me aback the way they were covering it. I actually went, so when I sat down and said to my brother, "I've just been listening to Clyde." they're talking about Rangers as if it matters, as if it's proper football. It was just a level of seriousness that I've not heard talked about Rangers.
But again, that's because, you know, now we'll kind of put my hand up and say, yeah, I do listen to it quite regularly, but it's because it's dominated by West of Scotland journalists and West of Scotland pundits who actually, they still think in the old firm paradigm.
Yeah.
They still think in terms of, you know, we can continue to report Rangers in exactly the same way that we've reported them over years, because that's what our listeners want.
So that's your 122nd review that we're going to keep revisiting this well for quite some considerable time on the Rangers.
Yeah, I think we will. I think the only thing is, you know, I mean, first and foremost, my interest is only with Celtic, but I mean, it's impossible to ignore what's going on and kind of laugh out loud at what's going on over at Ibrox, and there's no way out of their troubles for them at the moment, absolutely no way.
Which is nice to know. partly from one simple perspective, the greater chance we've got of hitting 10 in a row and taking all the Champions League money that comes away in Scotland, the better for me.
Well, I think there's some serious things in there because, as you will know, the new BT Sport Champions League deal kicks in, is it next season?
Yep.
So the kind of exponential increase in TV revenues for Celtic is going to be absolutely huge. And again, I think there's a lot of people out there in the mainstream media. I don't think they've cottoned onto this yet. I don't think they've seen that gap is going to increase. And you know, to a certain extent, for as long as Celtic play in Scotland, they could get to the point where they've got more money than they know what to do with.
Yes.
Now, I mean, it's probably for a podcast for another day, you know, but we almost ought to think about, well, where does Celtic go with their kind of 5-year plan? What are their targets, you know, and how do they use their income, not just to best advantage on the playing field, but also to kind of make sure that we continue to have a strong and healthy support of games and the next generation of fans that are coming through.
Well, as you say, that's a podcast for another day, and it's to be honest, I think it's actually a point that the Celtic board are probably already at.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for joining us, Hull Boy, and speak again soon.
Yeah, good to speak to you, Harry. Take care.
Cheers, bye. Myself and St Anthony have got some more good guests lined up for the podcast. As I'm recording this, hopefully I will be meeting another one tomorrow morning, and that podcast will be up in a couple of days' time. A wee bit different than the one I'm meeting. He's not a Celtic man. He's got a book coming out, and my clue for the more a more obscure clue would be Doctor in the House. So, enough from me saying thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Cheers and good night. Good night. We were years ahead, but now those stars are dead. Let me go. All hopeless fantasies are making fools of me. Let me go. I walk alone and yet never say goodbye. Let me go. Change of heart, a change of mind. Thank you.
Use of our life.